And welcome back to Success Made to Last Legends. I'm Rick Tocchini. This show is brought to you by Edward Jones Financial Advisors, along with Heather Barnes Media. And we are so glad to have on our show today the one and only David Sanger. He is a six-time Grammy Award-winning drummer, which everybody knows I love interviewing drummers. He's a songwriter, engineer, producer, record mogul here in Austin, Texas, currently doing the drumming core for the Western swing group Asleep at the Wheel, which is fantastic. His career has taken him from the smallest honky-tonks around the world to performing for audiences of 80,000 in some distant countries known as Japan, Brazil, and Czechoslovakia. David, it's an honor to get to honor you today. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I feel welcome.
I want you to tell our audience the Paul Harvey rest of your story, starting with where you're from originally.
Okay.
And tell us about some of those achievements along your journey.
Well, I'm originally from a town called Coronado, California. They call it an island, but it's a little peninsula in San Diego Bay. And I was born there and raised there. And I went to school there up until high school, went away to school, went to boarding school in Los Angeles, and then went to a college in Los Angeles and Connecticut at Occidental College and Wesleyan University. And from there, I made my way to Texas, first San Antonio and then Austin. I really didn't know what I was heading for. I knew nothing about Austin, the music scene, when I moved to San Antonio. And I had a friend who I went to college with who lived up here. And I would come visit him, and everyone in Austin was a professional Frisbee player and still is. So then we're talking, 40-something years later. And so I would come to Austin, and I thought, boy, everyone here just plays Frisbee and listens to music. You know, this is great. I got to move here. So I moved up to Austin. I got a job as a cook and a waiter. And I hadn't played drums really for a couple years after I graduated from school. I said, well, let me just give this a shot again. And I got some gigs around town. And about a year later, I was playing Asleep at the Wheel. And from there, it was a 35-year journey in Asleep at the Wheel. So I recently have retired from the wheel. I retired from the road. That was effective last October. I did the 50th anniversary of the band. I did the tour that the band did. And that was the end of my tenure in the band. So that leads me to where we are now, which is really kind of almost my third lifetime, really. There was sort of before marriage, and now, you know, being sort of like concentrating on the family rather than concentrating on drums. And that's where I am now.
Very good. Congratulations on that long journey with the wheel. And as you approach this new chapter of your life, and maybe you're taking a breather, what do you want to accomplish relative to these new priorities?
Well, it's funny. I was talking with my wife this morning. I was like, what am I going to talk about? And really, up until I left the band, my main focus was drums or some sort of music endeavor. And now it's, how can I be of assistance in raising my children? I've got two little kids. I started pretty late. And my wife is 16 years younger than I am, which I was allowed to start late because of that. But so now I've got a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old, and I'm here for in the support position, not really achieving more than what can I do to what other what can I do to help out here? And what can I do to kind of maybe pursue things that I would never pursue before?
Mm-hmm.
You know, learning how to use power tools, gardening. I tried to learn a little Italian during the pandemic, cooking for, you know, rather than cooking for one, I'm cooking for four. Learning piano for the first time in my life, things like that. I'm just like, kind of like, I could do this and I could do that. And then none of them require getting on a bus and traveling for 30 hours, you know, before you get to the show.
Wow. You just defined what we would consider a man who has moved from success to significance.
Oh, okay. I was wondering what that meant. So I guess I was neck deep in it. I didn't even know it.
You are, and you have moved into this self-appointed chapter of Renaissance Man.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you to describe over the last year, especially since retirement from the wheel, what has brought you some of the deepest joy in your life?
Well, I mean, seeing my kids sort of discover new things, watching my wife grow her, she's got a podcast, and watching her grow that, all these things, being able to take a vacation that I determine when and where it is, has brought me like great joy, because for 35 years, I had to build my life around the schedule of the band. And now I can say, no, we're going to go here. Now we're going to visit my mom, who's 90, going to turn 91 next month. And we can do that. And I can visit my brothers and my sister. And these are things I had to miss out on for a long, long time. And that has brought me really a great joy.
Oh, that is fantastic. I like the part that you are cooking and learning Italian and piano at the same time. And you are reminiscent of a polymath who's now been given a chance to dive into different domains, not necessarily master them like Da Vinci, but you're giving yourself time to breathe and to grow as an individual. And what a bonus to have two young teenagers, almost teenagers, in your household, and you can teach them the finer parts of drumming or music or life itself.
Yeah, we all get to learn together. So they're learning things while I'm learning things. And the interesting thing that I haven't, you know, that I have to deal with is, it's been a long time since I did something that I was really bad at. So I have to be patient with myself. I have to be, you know, forgiving with myself to be able to, you know, for lack of a better word, suck at something for a while before you get good at it. And so you can understand what your children are going through when they are suffering and they're like, I cannot get this math problem, or I don't understand what they're asking with this English question. It's like, allow yourself to be bad at something for a while and allow yourself to grow. And especially with piano, I'm horrible at piano. And if I step away from it, with drums, I can remember stuff for decades. But with piano, I'll learn a song and I'll go away from the piano for a couple of weeks or something, and it's gone, completely disappeared. And I have to go back to the beginning and start again and build up those synapses and try to learn again. And it's a little life lesson there.
It is a life lesson. Ooh, you brought up a good point about precision and muscle memory. And why is it that we can go to a drum kit and play a song from the 1950s or the Zombies or the Kinks or the Animals, and it's, you know it instantly, and it's intuitive. And then we go into some other domain and we go, what the heck's going on with this? What's wrong with my memory? Don't you know that chord from this chord? I play guitar and sing as well. It's like, I have no muscle memory for that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, and I would, years ago, one of the bass players for Asleep at the Wheel and I would hang out, and he had an incredible memory for what we called fun food facts. So he would just like, he loved reading about food, and he would be able to just say, well, you know, the celery is a neutral food. You know, he would know things like which foods, you know, had burned calories and didn't burn calories. What was what? But as far as bass playing goes, he had to really remember. He had to struggle to remember. And we're like, I wonder what that is, whether it's because either you have an innate ability to do something, or maybe it's because your mind is really interested in that. I don't know what it is, but there's certain things. I mean, obviously, if you build it up and build it up, we play drums for so long. If you play drums for 50 years, all that knowledge is in there, and it mm-hmm. gets stored in there. But, you know, guitar, playing guitar chords and singing. I mean, I would watch Ray Benson play and sing, and he would be sick, or he'd be, you know, maybe, you know, feeling no pain, you know, like, you know, he'd be like distracted by something, and he'd still be able to do it. And I don't know how you can do that, you know, because it must take hours and hours and hours and hours. Just, it's got to be in there.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah.
It's like Malcolm Baldrige, I think is his name, writes about the 10,000 hours that the Beatles practice, and then it just became intuitive. And I think about, you know, your mom's still living. Man, what a lucky guy to have a mom. But my mom, when she was alive, she would cook something from 30 or 40 years ago, and she would know the exact ingredients. And so, David, is that a part of the composition of your brain that you want to know? You love doing what you do, and you know, you remember things instinctively because you're so engaged in that activity. Is that part of it?
I think so. I think too, it's what I find with my drumming is I'm kind of a pattern guy. Mm-hmm. In other words, I'm not learning some specific things. In other words, if you're doing a sponge cake, right, you're not going to go, I'm going to do this particular recipe. You say, okay, well, what is a sponge cake made of? You know, what are the different elements of a meal? What is the general concepts of it? And I tend to think that general concepts, when you get those down, you just fit them in different patterns. And it aids in your memory and your retention. But rather than memorizing a specific thing. So if your mom was baking a ratatouille or something, you know, she probably knew generally what was in there, maybe not specific, you know, amounts or something. It's like, well, we'll do a little this and a little this, cause I know there's this and I want this flavor. And she knew what she was trying to achieve by certain patterns, because cooking especially is like the same things over and over and over in different configurations.
That's exactly right. I think inside that though is something that fuels it called passion and love. And in the case of my mom, it was, I want to make my family happy. And then in the case of growing up in the 50s and 60s, I just want them to feel full, so they'll make it to the next meal.
There's passion and love and desperation. And I have the same thing, but I'm just trying to keep my kids from blowing up. Just eat something. You know, I'll make you whatever you want. Just eat it. You know,
exactly.
We've got a low blood sugar thing going on. So,
yeah, well, that's, That's important to know. Okay, so final question for you before we take a break. You've won a lot of Grammys. I want you to tell us about the feeling you had when you won your first Grammy, and now what does it mean to you? Are you to the so what point of your life? But how about that first Grammy?
Well, that was it was such a great experience of going. It was the band had already won one Grammy at that point before me. The band had been going for 16 years before I joined. But that was so great. It was in New York at the Radio City Music Hall. We got to go to the, it was a very small then. Now it's very big. It's at the Staples Center now. It's very big. And the first one, the reception for the Grammy nominees was in a banquet room or something. It wasn't very big. And I brought a friend of mine, and we met, you know, Suzanne Vega, Lenny Kaye, and the people were just there, and you could go up to them, talk to them. And when we went to the show, it was just, I was able to take a friend because one of the guys in the band didn't go. So we just snagged his tickets. You can't do that anymore. So I had some friends with me, and it was so wonderful. Like Lou Reed sang Take a Walk on the Wild Side in like one of the little cubby holes on the, there's like a balcony, like a little balcony thing. And I think it was like I think maybe somebody played New York State of Mind or something. It was one of the Grammys are coming back to New York. And then we won, and you get to go backstage and you see, you're like in line with all these people. And I won a lot. We won six. So it was sometimes, if I can kind of blend them all together, like one time Bonnie Raitt saw my suit and said, "Great suit." And I was standing, David Sanborn was standing behind me, and you see Dr. John walking by you. And I asked, what's her, the bass player, I can't remember her name. She did the Van Morrison song. And, anyway, I asked her like, where's the bar? You know, it's like, it's just crazy that it's so great. Mm-hmm. And it was such a wonderful feeling to go the first time and to win the first time. It was just, it was magical. It was really, really great. And be in New York too, at the same time. It's really great.
Mm. Thank you for describing that. That's all a part of that great journey that you've been on. But I, you know, just as a comment that, I like the sound of your new journey.
It's all good.
It is all good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's, in the broad sense, it's all, as the kids say, it's all good. You know, it's all good. So if the difficult thing is letting go of that idea of, in order to be successful, I have to be recognized. And I have to let go of that. It's not very easy, but, getting free beer is like sort of my way of encapsulating what it's like to be successful in the music business. If you're successful, they give you free beer. If you're not, they don't. So that's kind of like, you know, I don't drink beer anymore, but it's kind of a, you know, the idea is people are like, I have to get used to the idea of people not sort of thinking I'm great all the time and being just happy with what I'm doing. And then it's fantastic, whatever you do.
There you go. We are talking with David Sanger, our special guest on Legends today, and we're going to be right back after this commercial message.
Hello, I'm Heather Barnes, food and product photographer and storyteller behind the lens. Our Austin-based team is all about visual solutions. For your brand, it's essential for your product to be memorable and have stickiness. Our clients like Ghirardelli, Tiff's Treats, and Nautamu choose our photography to develop positive associations with their brand. They call our work inspiring because it moves consumers into a relationship with their company. And we can do the same for you. Learn more today at heatherbarnes.com. Focused on you, your story, and your success with memorable photography garnished with love.
We're back with David Sanger. Hey, David, before we get into the lightning round, I want you to give some advice to our listening audience that is, we have a big listening audience, but for the ones that are, let's say, between 56 and 65 that are pondering doing exactly what you're doing, which is stepping into the new chapter of happiness.
Yeah.
How would you advise them on the process of letting go of the past and looking forward into the future without using the word retirement?
Right. Because, yeah. Like I was saying before, I think the thing that I'm still learning and the important thing is to not gauge your life by necessarily how people perceive you. You know, if you gauge your life, it's like, what am I doing to be happy? Then the world is completely open to you. But if you say, okay, you know, I have to be on this size stage, or if I have to make this much money, or I have to, you know, have this many clients or whatever it might be, if that's your measure of success, it's going to be hard to keep that up. You know, you have to kind of let those perceptions go and welcome other ways to, you know, gauge success.
Thank you very much. I like that.
Yeah. Registered trademark. No.
That's right. All right. Are you ready for the lightning round?
I'm ready. I'm ready as I'm going to be, I suppose.
Okay. So I know that you've been on the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And I'd like for you to tell us who you think is the greatest drummer who ever has appeared on the Tonight Show.
Well, I don't know all the drummers that have appeared on the Tonight Show. I'd have to say, you know, I'm going to go with this. And he's not my favorite drummer, but he is one of the great drummers. You got to say, when you say Tonight Show, you got to say Buddy Rich, because he is so masterful at what he does. It's not my bag, as we say, but he is sort of synonymous with the Tonight Show. And he would, you know, if you can see some of those clips of him on there, it's just unbelievable what that guy can do. And it was great television.
It was great television. And he taught Johnny how to play drums, and he bought Johnny a drum kit.
He did. He did.
I actually saw Buddy's drum set at the Zildjian plant in Massachusetts, and I went over and thumped the snare drum so I could say, I play Buddy Rich's drum.
I got to, when I played the Tonight Show the first time, we went really early, and it was when Jay was subbing for Johnny, so oh. I didn't ever get to meet Johnny, but we went really early, and I sat behind Ed Shaughnessy's kit. And got my picture taken before the stage manager came up and said, oh, I don't really want you to, you're not really supposed to sit back there. But it was great. And I had Ed sign it. I had a little splash symbol and I had him sign it for me. And it was in those days when all the old guys were still in the band, and Doc Severinsen was the band leader, and he was chewing the guys out for, you know, being lazy at rehearsal, and of course I learned a valuable lesson, if you don't mind me saying, when the guys were setting up, they were talking about IRAs and investments, and I was like, why aren't they talking about music, man? And I learned, you know, it's like you get to a certain point and what interests you is not music. It's other things. You play music, but your mind is going to other places. You're interested in other places. And that was like a valuable lesson in like what the real cats were up to. You know, they're not going to want to talk about music. They're going to want to talk about, you know, a nice investment.
There you go. Now, that's a good bridge too. I played in a jazz band called the Terra Cats, Earth Cats. Why is it that, why is it within the music groups that we like to call each other cats?
Well, you know, I, you know, it's a, I'm trying to emulate the hipsters, man. You know, you can be a dog or you can be a cat.
You want to
pick one.
There you go. We're almost into Andrew Lloyd Webber world of cats, but I'm going to avoid that one. Okay. So, why do you think made John Bonham such a great drummer?
Oh, triplets. One word, triplets. And not just triplets, the two and three of the triplet, not the one. And that is it to me. Everything for him moved in threes, mm-hmm. and it propels it. And Elvin Jones is the same way. And it's that rolling feeling that he did so beautifully.
Thank you for that. Now, this next question I asked Dave, David before the show, so he knows the right answer. This is our practice. Who is the best female singing drummer of all time?
You should say, who's the best female singer of all time? Karen Carpenter.
Thank you very much.
The best singer. I mean, I don't think there's another female singer for me that moves me as much as she does.
Man, we're in the same choir on that. I remember watching her on Andy Williams' show, and it was their debut, and she goes, boom, 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 boom. And then she sang, why do birds?
I would like to find out which one of those songs, which of the Carpenter songs she plays on and which Hal Blaine plays on. Because just to find out where she was at in the studio, because I know she played on some.
Yeah.
She must have played on some. But those are some beautiful drum parts. And if we may get a little drum nerdy right now, the use of the hi-hat, you know, like a lot of people now, it's like if they're not going to do full snare, they're going to do like a little cross stick or something. Mm-hmm. But the Carpenters, and it might have been Hal, it might have been her, it was hi-hat. You know, it's just boom, tss, boom. Tss. And it's beautiful. Nobody does that now.
It's so simple. I wonder how much of that was influenced by Herb Albert, their producer.
Who knows? I mean, you know, yeah. Or her brother, who also was like instrumental in making those records.
That's true.
So,
okay. So, how would you rank Don Henley as one of the best all-time drummers and singers?
I would rank him as one of the best all-time singers. I would rank him as a drummer that was perfect for the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
But I love simple drumming, and Don Henley is a great simple drummer. He had a few nice, you know, parts. I'm not a huge, you know, I love his drumming. I got nothing against his drumming, but I'm not going to put him up way up in the top of drummers, but I'll put him at the very top for singers and songwriters. Absolutely. And perfect for the band.
Mm, good. This next question is controversial, so close your ears, folks, if you like rap music. I always thought that rap music was an oxymoron until I saw Hamilton. I'd love to know what you think about rap music.
Okay, so we're talking hip-hop, rap, mm-hmm. music where there's rapping going on. Okay, so I think the reason I find it hard to sort of appreciate as a musician is loops are the music is built over loops.
Yep.
And the concept of a loop to me, it's the same thing over and over. It's the way the music came about. So it's hard for me musically to kind of get into it, because I know it repeats and it's not somebody necessarily playing it. But I love the concept of it. I'm kind of hard of hearing, and I've never been able to hear lyrics very well. So it takes me a long time when the when the words are going by, it's hard. But that being said, I'm not like a huge rap fan. I don't mind rap, and some of it I really like, but for me, and it's probably because I'm an old white guy, Hamilton is people playing. I can hear the words.
Mm-hmm.
The subject matter interests me. So it really spoke to me. It was really like, I love Hamilton. I'm not saying that, and it really made me appreciate the genre. Absolutely. And it did it in a way that old white guy could appreciate it. Now, there are such phenomenal rap, hip hop tunes and rap tunes. My wife and I just listened to a new Beyonce record the other day. And we listen, she's a DJ. So, I get exposed to a lot of stuff that I normally wouldn't get to as a 61-year-old guy. But, I'm not counting it out. It's just, it's not my go-to right now.
Well
but
said.
Hamilton's fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I think. Hamilton kind of brought us along. Okay. Yeah. Just a few more questions for our special guest, David Sanger. There's lots of famous movie lines that people live by. And the one that we watch, because it probably comes on too often, is from Shawshank Redemption: get busy living or get busy dying. Is there a particular line in a movie or a Broadway play that you live by?
Yeah, man. The entire Spinal Tap movie. The longer you're in the music business, the more true it is. So,
give us one line that you overuse.
Can I curse on this thing?
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
Well, there's the guy standing around Elvis's grave, and they try to sing Heartbreak Hotel, and it doesn't work. And one guy, I think Derek Small says, it's it really puts things in perspective, doesn't it? And David St. Hubbins says, too much fucking perspective. Everything in Spinal Tap is what I live my life by.
And that's the Spinal Tap moment with David Sanger. That's funny. All right, we're getting down to the last two questions. There's a song that George Strait sings, and it goes something like this: there's a difference in living and living well. So what's that like for you? What's living well at 61?
Man, living well is, doing what I want to do, doing the things I want to do, being here, being at home or being with my family, and just kind of being able to do what I want to do, how I want to do it, and making sure that I appreciate it when I'm doing it.
Wow, very good. And the last question for you, Mr. Sanger, is this: why should our listening audience find a place in their heart to move from success to significance and do something good for others?
Well, to me, there's no really greater joy than doing something for somebody else. If you do it things just for yourself, it's a lonely business. It's just you, you can appreciate it, But I mean, when people tell people what they've done, they're really trying to share it with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just do things for other people and you're already sharing it? You know, you're doing both. You're doing something for yourself and for somebody else. And it's twice as much joy.
That is great. Twice as much joy. What a wonderful way to wrap up this show. I think we caught you at the right time and the right place, because you have moved from success to significance, and it sounds like you're living a joyful life as a dad, as a chef, a wannabe chef, a wannabe Italian.
Yes, that's exactly it. Wannabe piano player.
A wannabe Ferrani and Teicher. So what a cool stage you're at. Thank you so much for being on. What fun. And I don't get to talk to drummers of your level too often, and so it was really cool to get to scramble my brains over stuff like that. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. That was our special guest, David Sanger. Hope you enjoyed the show as much as we did. And as we always say, along your journey of success, we hope that you stop and do something significant. Have a good week.
I am so glad that we met Serban Marasini of Edward Jones Financial Advisors. Serban has been there for all of our life moments, always centered on us and where we want to go. He was instrumental in helping us live around the world, building our media company, and nurturing us as a true partner for the next stage of our lives. You know, there are 19,000 financial advisors serving over 7 million clients. But Serban treats us like we are the only one, and the one that really matters. If you want to contact Serban, call him today at 303-494-2310. Again, the number is 303-494-2310. You know that life is for the living. Why not partner for all of it with Edward Jones?